Mommy, sing me to sleep.
Sure, sweetie. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. You're a ball of gas that's very far. 32 light years in the sky. 10 parsecs, which is really high. Helium, carbon, and
hydrogen
fuse to make our starry friend. When it enters supernova stage, it explodes with bursts of rays. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
Thanks, Mom.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, so it's up to parents to help create a brighter future for them. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
All right. Good evening and welcome back. Just like every Wednesday, this is Aishwarya signing on from WMBR Cambridge for Season 2, Episode 2 of Post-It Wall. And just like every Wednesday, I hope that this show will remind you to take a little time out of your crazy schedule to search for and listen to the unique and intricate stories that surround you. Stories that perhaps hide under the surface of the characters that you interact with every day. Stories with themes that connect us across place and time, age and culture, and belief. And stories with life lessons buried in them for all of us to savor and to cherish. So, for tonight, going back to the theme of old friends, tonight's guest is someone that I've known for several years now and has inspired me with his outlook for almost as long. But a bit of a plot twist this week. Unlike every other guest I've had on the show, he isn't actually an MIT student. He happens to call home a few of those fancy brick buildings down the river. But anyway, the person sitting across from me tonight in the studio is a financial wizard and an aspiring entrepreneur. He comes from an undergrad at Princeton and is working now on an MBA. After more than a successful stint on Wall Street, he's also a talented athlete, a compelling speaker, and a writer, and an aspiring musician, sort of. But what stands out to me more than any of these things, or even all of these things combined, is his introspective nature. His ability to question himself, to work hard every day to better himself personally and spiritually, and encourage those around him to do the same, people like me. I can't say that too many of my other friends are willing to sit down with me and debate everything from Indian philosophy to the meaning of happiness over a scoop of Toskies. And I'm sure that tonight's conversation will be just as interesting, if not more. So, after that huge buildup, as is the tradition on this show, I won't introduce this mystery person to you just yet without asking him what has become the show's most infamous question. So, mystery person, if you could leave one bit of advice behind for me, for all our listeners, or for the rest of the world, what would it be?
First off, Aishwarya, thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be here. If there is one piece of advice that I would give to you and everyone else in the world, I think it's just to ask yourself one question each day, and that's, am I happy? And I think asking yourself that question on a regular basis and thinking about it will ultimately lead you to leading the life that you want to live. It's not about getting it perfect the first time around, but the iteration towards the life that you want to lead.
That's incredible, and it ties in so well with the personality, the image I have of your personality, which is that you're capable of being introspective, and that's really hard. So before we kind of dig more into that, why don't you back up for a second, tell everyone who's listening your name, what you're doing, and what about your life story or your life experiences brought you to that really wonderful piece of advice?
So, hello everyone out there. My name is Ravi Yagiraman. I'm originally from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. It's a town right outside of Philadelphia in southern New Jersey. Right now, I'm getting an MBA degree at Harvard, and this summer I'm working on a healthcare startup. I guess it was the question, what's led me to the piece of advice? My story has been a series of events where I've wanted lots of things in my life mm-hmm. from the time I was small. Aishwarya alluded that I played sports. I played a lot of tennis growing up, and I always wanted to do well in tennis, and I always wanted to do well in school. And fortunately, I happened to be given a lot of God-given talent, and I happened to have early success in both growing up. Mm-hmm. And I realized after a while that was good. That was good for a while. But good is never really good enough. And you're sort of always reaching for the next tier. Every promotion you get just puts you in a league of people that you realize are even better than you. And there's no real top. There's no point at which you're ever satisfied with what you have.
Yeah.
And getting what you want isn't the road to happiness. It's not the road towards a life of meaning. It's almost the most counterproductive thing you could possibly do.
Huh.
And so I think at some point, early success in childhood leads to crippling failure at some point.
Yeah.
And at that point, the longer you put that off, the harder you fall. And I think that's what led me back to starting back from square one. What makes me happy?
That's incredible to even think about and digest. So getting what you want, perhaps, is counterproductive, and that isn't the definition of happiness, at least if I interpreted what you said correctly. So tell me more about that. How does one rebound from failure? And can you give me an example maybe of, I just narrated this amazing trajectory and arc from a Princeton undergrad to a Harvard MBA and Wall Street. And can you give me an example of some failures along that path and what you learned from it and how that informed your definition of happiness?
Yes, I mean, I think one of the best examples was playing sports growing up. I was a tennis player, and so from the time I was around 10 years old, I went all around the country with my dad playing tennis tournaments and taking lessons and going to practices after school. And all I wanted growing up was, you know, to be ranked highly, to be recruited by college coaches, to play in college. And I was incredibly fortunate to be able to do a lot of that. And it culminated to ending up playing, to being recruited to play in college.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the pinnacle of achievement for so long, from the time I was, you know, a little kid to when I was 18 years old. The only thing that mattered in the world was to be recruited to play in college. And you surround yourself with friends and family and coaches and mentors who all tell you that, Ravi, that's what you should aim for. That is success. After you've done this, at age 18, you've made it. That
yeah.
is life in a nutshell.
Yep.
And then you get there, and first day of practice, I was injured. First day of practice. I'd gotten injured the summer before, and my first week, I had to sit out. And the first fall tournament was coming up, and I get back out on the court, and I start hitting. It's not feeling as good as I wanted to, and I realized that the first tournament of the season's coming up, and I have a playoff with a walk-on from the team, someone who wasn't even recruited. So, someone who my big ego, I thought I was in a different category from. Now is one of my closest friends, and I lost to him, and he got to go on the trip, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And it's at that moment you realize that all the stuff, even though I'd said for so long, all I want is to be able just to be right here. At that moment, I lost the ability to enjoy what I dreamed my entire life to do. And so getting exactly what I'd wanted for so long only left a void of things to come that I would want. And that hasn't ever slowed down. As soon as you want something and get it, you only reach for more. I haven't found a way to stop that endless cycle. So you back up and ask yourself, why is there always the need for one more thing that you need rather than being able to enjoy what you have right now?
Yeah. So to build off of that, a question I have then is, how do you combat that sense of wanting to continue to achieve that's sort of been driven into us since we were toddlers, right? We've been told high school, then college, college, then grad school, professorship. Well, this is more my life, I guess, but it's just one after another. So what, maybe this brings up themes of faith and gratitude and things that you can touch upon, but how do you combat that sense of just wanting more and wanting to achieve the next thing?
I think it's totally natural. It's neither good nor bad. I think it's just, it's totally natural and it's programmed into us. And so I think, you know, for me, the way I think about it is you're almost, it's just a process of unlearning it, unlearning that cycle of wanting more and more things over time, if you believe that's how you want to lead your life. And I think the decision that's how I want to lead my life is a personal choice that I at least try, I've tried to make and have tried to be a little more intentional, I think, each day about. I don't necessarily know if I wasn't always in a position to make that choice, but I think it's up to each and every individual person, if they're asking themselves the question, you know, am I happy, to see, you know, is that, you know, what helps you be happy? And for me, it's wanting less things.
Yeah. Yeah, so the next question I was going to ask is specifically for you. What are the sort of tips and tricks that you practice on a daily basis to kind of constantly feel that sense of happiness?
I think probably first and foremost is just setting out time each day to get your thoughts outside your head. Mm-hmm. It's really tough to be aware of sort of what, you know, life happens really quickly to all of us. And it's tough to process. It's almost like, think about like after like a tough day when you're listening to your best friend complain about their day. And a lot of times the only thing you're thinking is like, wow, like you don't really have problems. It's like, these are first world problems. Like it's all going to be okay. Just take a step back. And it's that there, take a step back. It's when you look at someone else's problems, they seem so manageable and short term, and they seem like passing clouds. It's only when you look at your own problems that they seem insurmountable and persistent and enduring and insurmountable. And so finding time to get your thoughts outside of your head and look at them and asking yourself, am I happy with these thoughts making me feel this way? And so one thing I've tried to do starting this year is just take five to 10 minutes before bed each day and just write a couple sentences about my day. Mm-hmm. And sort of just be brutally honest. You know, if I feel a certain way, I'll definitely just let it out.
That's really nice. And not to call you out on this, but I know there's an activity that I actually learned from you, and I try to keep it going on a personal basis, which is the end of each week, sort of collecting all the thoughts I've written across for each day that basically form the highs and lows of each week, and either sharing that with somebody else or just using it as a source of reflection. And given that that's something that I saw you do and then decided to adopt it myself, why is that something that you find helpful? It's sort of a little bit different from happiness, I think.
I think for me, that exercise was actually given by another one of our close friends that nice. I stole it off of, so I'm definitely not the original. I think it's helpful because for me, that gave me happiness because it was a lot more about accepting myself. When you have to share your highs and lows with someone else, I mean, one, it gets your thoughts outside your head, but having to be brutally honest about yourself and share that with someone else, I think forces you to accept things about yourself that that maybe you've put off on accepting, things that you feel bad about yourself for.
Yeah.
Accepting yourself helps you love yourself more, which helps you be more affectionate and caring towards others. And so writing down all the deep, dark places of your mind and getting that on paper, staring at it, and then actually sharing it with someone else and realizing that, you know, they don't think you're a terrible person. It's just all a natural part of living your life, I think helps you accept and get past a lot of the things that you feel.
I really like that. And I guess you touched upon yet another thing I was going to ask you, which is this whole notion of accepting yourself, loving yourself, self-confidence. if I had to pick one thing that our generation, especially, you know, all of us that are students and are intellectuals, something that we suffer from maybe the most is this idea of imposter syndrome, that we just aren't as good as maybe we could be. How do you deal with that on a daily basis? Is that something you think about?
For sure. And you know the feeling well, and I guess a lot of other people who go to a place like MIT definitely know the feeling well, where you're just surrounded by so many people who have excelled on so many different dimensions, and it's easy to feel like an ant in the middle of a giant field and feel like you're worthless, and nothing you do can ever measure up to all these glorious achievements by those around you. And again, no matter how high you achieve, you just vault yourself into a more difficult to compete with category. Whether you're an undergrad, master's student, or PhD candidate, you're always staring at the people above you. I think for me, it's sort of just going through different phases of my life and seeing different situations where, whether it was school, whether it was tennis, whether it was, you know, working in finance, the people at the top of the people above you are always looking at the people above them. We're looking at the people above them. And the people who are the most successful are looking at the people with nothing and saying they have a better family life than me. And
so it never ends.
It's an endless circle of people only wanting what others have. And so clearly having everything is not the answer.
Yeah. I guess that takes me to another point or question that I was hoping you'd touch upon, which is if trying to search for or try to acquire things that other people have is maybe not the answer, maybe part of the solution is also to be happy with and grateful for what you have already and what, you know, what God has given you. So a question I have for you is, what are you grateful for? This amazing journey, all the steps that you've taken to be here, to be in this moment. What are some of the people or the things or the events in your life that you're just grateful for?
I mean, I think this moment right now is great because I'm flashing back in my mind to everything I'm grateful for. So Aishwarya, I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for being on, being here right
thank
now.
Thank you.
I wasn't paid to say that. I think it's so tough to realize what you have, because you have to see someone who doesn't have what you have in order to be able to properly appreciate that. And so I think gratitude is just something that either has to be very intentional to be able to properly appreciate what you have, just because it's easy to overlook that. Or you just have to make sure to surround yourself with people where you're realizing that, you know, things that you've been given that not necessarily everyone else has. And so surrounding yourself with a lot of diverse people. I took for granted sort of the fact that my parents have lived in the same house since I grew up.
Yeah.
And then when you go to college, you realize that some people will never see their high school friends again because they have no house to go back to, because maybe their parents have split, or their parents have moved, their parents are no more.
Yeah.
That's something so simple that I've never thanked my parents for.
Wow. Can you maybe give me a specific example of either an encounter that you've had with people that you go to school with, or a scenario or an event that has really made you grateful for what you have? And it's kind of an eye-opening experience on that front. If you can't think of anything, you don't have to.
I would say, just this past weekend, actually, I went to a wedding for a close high school friend.
Mm-hmm.
And his parents weren't at the wedding.
Oh.
And that's something I've always taken for granted, is that my parents will support me in whatever I do.
Yeah.
Truly support me in everything that I do. And I still believe that today. And it's something I never give them credit for, and they have. They've stood by me every step of the way and never given any indication that they've wavered from that.
Yeah.
So I guess that means I have to go home for Father's Day now.
yep.
But that was a pretty powerful example where I think there's points in your life where your family means everything.
Yeah.
And the other 98% of the time, you don't treat your family as well, because it's not one of those times where you're super keen towards, or you're super sensitive to needing them around, but it means everything in those 1% of moments. And so I think that made me very, very grateful for what I have.
That's really powerful. I guess it's an old adage, but you don't know hot until you've experienced cold. So, and I know on the show we spend so much time talking about theory and perspective, and it's important to give people maybe examples of things that people have probably experienced in their day-to-day lives and just never connected it back to something so meaningful. So thank you for that. A few more questions. I know we're getting to the end of the hour, but on a completely different vein, if I could ask you, what does faith mean to you, and is it something that's important to you, and why?
That's such an interesting question. For me, the way I interpret faith is I'm never going to understand everything. I believe in a power that goes beyond my comprehension. And so accepting that exists is faith, because it's beyond anything I can prove. I just have to take the leap. And it benefits me to do so, because believing there's things out of my control lets me let things go. Realizing that I only have control over a very small set of things and the rest is not out of my control sort of helps me, you know, if I'm asking the question, you know, what makes me happy, I just only have to focus on the few things I can control. And so having faith, accepting there's a higher power, accepting that there's most things in life you can't control, I think just helps me have a shorter list of things to focus on when asking the question, am I happy? Is it important? I think it can be a double-edged sword sometimes, because another thing I believe is sort of, right now I believe a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I'm always asking myself the question, am I happy? How do I be happy? And I'm always trying to evolve my beliefs towards, you know, holding beliefs that'll make me lead, you know, a life that I'm more proud of, that I'm happier with. And so I'm not there yet. And so a lot of things I believe naturally have to be let go and be replaced with better ways to live, better ideas. And so faith is holding tightly to ideas. It's sort of like the a priori assumption that, you know, this is true.
Yeah.
And if you hold too many things like that, it's tough to evolve your beliefs over time and get to the life that you want to lead. And so I think faith is very important for me. But it's almost like faith in moderation, because I still want to approach life as a beginner. I still want to be able to learn from people around me, and I still feel the need to keep improving over time, because I'm definitely not there yet.
Huh, that's really interesting. There's sort of a dichotomy that you're hinting at, though, right? There's faith in an array or a sea of beliefs that we've been taught or given since we were kids, and maybe evolving and growing faith in a higher power, in something that's bigger than us. Do you think, you know, it's important to sort of forfeit one set of beliefs or a faith that you have, that you might have been given, to sort of grow faith in another direction, or to each his own?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question completely.
So at least what I understood was you were talking about having, like, we might have a set of beliefs that just govern what we do every day, because they're things that we've learned from our parents or things that we've grown up with, just things that we believe in, versus I was talking more about faith and a higher power and how that guides the choices that we make every day. How do these kind of converge?
Gotcha. I actually really like that way of thinking about it. Yes, faith in the higher power, is sort of acceptance that there are things out of your control.
Yeah.
Faith in specific beliefs about the world is sort of like how confident you should be in any one thing you believe.
Yeah.
Like for me, is how confident should I be that asking myself, am I happy each day, is actually productive?
Yeah.
I definitely believe in not being 100% certain about anything. Is that you should always be willing to question every belief you hold, because you should be happy to question, because the questions and the countervailing points of view that come out of asking those questions and bouncing it across other people will either sharpen and heighten and make you more confident in that belief, or if they don't stand the test, will be replaced with something that'll be more productive for you. And so I think not holding any beliefs too tight, always leaving room for doubt, a little bit of room for doubt. I found that productive, but I also see the point in terms of, you know, the tough thing is then, you know, if there's certain principles you want to lead, you know, if you're a very principled person, if there's certain things that you will never compromise on, there is a trade-off there in terms of, are there certain absolute truths that you'll never waver from? And I guess from the way I've presented it would mean that there, I don't know if there are any absolute truths I'm willing to question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think those things are mutually exclusive necessarily. I think questioning a given thing can end up increasing your faith in that original belief, right? It's all a probabilistic distribution in the end. It could just end up weighting itself in favor of what you thought and what you knew, and that's what you ended up learning. Sorry, I always have to go back to the math.
You're way smarter than me, so I'm just trying to keep up here.
I'm just kidding. But no, I really like all that you said. All right, I'm debating. All right, I think we can squeeze in one or two more questions. So this is just a fun one, sort of offbeat, but I always like to ask people this. I've heard some really great answers. So if the final pages of your autobiography ended with a favorite quote or a favorite dialogue from a movie, a line from a song, even a scene from another book, what would it be? What would you want it to be?
Love seeks no reward. Love is its own reward.
Love seeks no reward. Love is its own reward. Tell me more. I'm not going to let you go with just that.
I would say that's probably been the quote that's been most productive for me in terms of the question, am I happy?
Yeah.
Is that the greatest thing to live for is love. And it's not about being loved so much as it is your own ability to show care and affection for others unconditionally. That's sort of the warm fuzzies that you get. It's not necessarily when, you know, someone else is loving towards you. It's the reciprocation. It's what you're able to put out into the world. And so the more you give, the more you end up getting.
That's so beautiful. And that's a quote I also really, really like. Yet again, I'm going to ask, can you give everyone who's listening sort of a very tangible example of a time you may have experienced this, giving love unconditionally and sort of being on the receiving end of it, maybe at a different time or as a result of that action?
I think probably the most tangible example is just sort of at the end of a long day, a day you want to forget about, a day that, you know, so many things were wrong with. And before you go to bed, if listen to your favorite song. I'd put on my headphones, 5 minutes, listen to my favorite song. And I sort of reconnect and feel grateful for everything that I have. I think about all the amazing people in my life. I think about how much I care about them. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy how easily that changes your surroundings, changes your perceptions of everything that happened that day. And the catharsis in that moment makes all the problems from that day totally worth it, if just for that moment before your head hits the pillow.
That's incredible. It's an incredible description and just such a wonderful feeling and a wonderful thought. I'm really glad that you brought that quote up and that you shared that explanation with us. So unfortunately, we are getting to the end of the hour, so I do have to wrap this up, and I do want to play a little bit of the instrumental piece that Ravi picked out and sent over to me. So I'll put that on air in a bit. But for everyone who's out there who's listening, first of all of us, and me in particular, we'd really like to thank you, Ravi. Thanks so much for being on the episode tonight. You've said some amazing things. So I hope you go back and hear the recording, because you will be impressed at all the things that you were able to share with us tonight. And that's it for this week's episode, folks. So next time, another person, another inspiring outlook on life, and yet another post-it note to add to our wall. So, until then, look a little harder, dig a little deeper, and search for the story underneath. And who knows, you might just be surprised. This is Aishwarya, signing off from WMBR Cambridge. Good night.
Hey, it's 7:59 in the evening. I thought there might be some bumper music there, but I didn't hear any. This is Brandy, and you're tuned to WMBR in Cambridge, and welcome to the next hour of The Pursuit of Happiness.